Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, founder of the Sports History Network and also known around these parts as the Football History Dude. Now, before we get into this episode, I just want to give you a huge thank you for all of the support that you've given the Sports History Network over the years. And as we close out this year, I just want to wish you happy holidays. And you're going to hear from other members of the network here at the end of this episode, so stay tuned. And speaking of these other members, well, let's jump right into another episode presented by the Sports History Network.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pigpen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, we'll just go no huddle through today's football history headlines. And today we have a special guest as we are joined by Craig Woodard Sr., who shares some personal history and a big event coming up at the end of this week. Hello, my football friends. Yes, this is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome to the Pigpen. And we have a really big program for you today. We are excited to have a guest, like we said at the beginning. Craig Woodard Sr. is going to be here to talk about the Superfest campaign that's going to be taking place this Saturday, February 6th. We'll get more to that in a moment, and Craig's personal athletic triumphs in the game of football and some other sports in just a moment. But we want to take care of a couple programming notes. First of all, today, February 1st, is our first day of the Search for Yardage contest, and the rules are posted on our win a prize section of the pigskindispatch.com website, so make sure you check them out there. But basically, you're going to go through, and we have a search word embedded into our blog post that we have today for February 1st. Look and find that. Go find that search keyword for the Search for Yardage contest rules. It's in big bold letters. You'll know exactly what it is. Put that into the search box on pigskindispatch.com on the front page or up near the top on the right side and click it. And then you're going to see a bunch of results come up, and some of them are going to have little yellow triangles up in the upper right hand corner of them, of the photographs for the posts. And you want to click on those. I have two question marks there. Click on those. Down at the bottom, you'll see a yellow banner pop up. It's going to tell you what your yardage is. And at the end of the week, end of Sunday, February 7th, the person with the most yardage is going to win a nice prize. You just have to put your email address in there so we know who's collecting these this yardage. And we will only use it to send you information about pigskindispatch.com, maybe a little bit about the Sports History Network, but it will not go to anybody else. We are not going to sell your email address. You want to get out of it anytime, you just let us know. But make sure you play that. It's going to be a fun game. I think everybody will enjoy it. You get to show off some of our content of Pigskin Dispatch and the Sports History Network, and some of our friends like Craig Woodard Sr., who we'll talk about in a second. Now let's go to our football history headlines. I'm not going to cover them all today. You can see that in our blog post for February 1st. I'm just going to hit some of the big hitters so we can make sure we get the activity with talking with Craig in just a moment. Okay, for your football history headlines. February 1st, 1913. American all-round athlete Jim Thorpe signs a contract to play baseball with the New York Giants. Unlike his other sporting endeavors, the Olympic medal winner's career in MLB was a little bit uninspiring, but he did good things at the Olympics and in football. Also on this date, 1968, Vince Lombardi stepped down as the Green Bay Packers head coach. Green Bay's longtime assistant Phil Benston became the franchise's general manager for the 1968 season. The NFL draft in 1972 is held, and Walt Pulaski of Notre Dame was the number one pick. And we have a bunch of Pro Bowl games to talk about. You can look at those on pigskindispatch.com. But the big header for today is February 1st, 2004, Reliant Stadium in Houston, Texas. What a game. It was Super Bowl 38, and it was to match the league's two top teams, the Carolina Panthers and the New England Patriots. It was amazing that neither team could score in the first or the third quarters, and they both ended up with a combined total of 868 yards and 61 points. The game was scoreless for a Super Bowl record of 26 minutes and 55 seconds before both teams combined to score 24 points prior to halftime and an amazing 37 combined points for the fast-paced fourth quarter. The New England Patriots squeaked by the Carolina Panthers 32-29, if you remember. The big game MVP was the GOAT quarterback Tom Brady, who set a Super Bowl record for the most pass completions with 32 while completing 66.7% of his passes and accumulating 354 yards passing for three touchdowns. It was the second championship in 3 years for the Patriots. another Super Bowl to talk about, took place at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida. The Arizona Cardinals and the Pittsburgh Steelers butted heads in Super Bowl 43. This championship game may have had more highlight reel type of plays than any other game in history. Who can forget the Larry Fitzgerald 64-yard score with 2:45 remaining to put the Cards up on the scoreboard? Or Santonio Holmes with a toe tap in the end zone late in the game that ended up being the game winner. But probably my favorite play was the game-changing play that James Harrison made with his over 100-yard pick six to end the first half. It was most likely a 14-point swing in the game. And oh, what the drama of that play at the time it occurred. The Steelers defeated the Arizona Cardinals 27-23, and the toe dance along with some other crucial grabs on the final drive earned the MVP award for Santonio Holmes. Another great Super Bowl to talk about in the state for February 1st, 2015 at the University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale, Arizona. The question on everyone's mind at the completion of Super Bowl 49 was, why didn't they go beast mode? With 26 seconds remaining, Seattle had the ball second and goal from the Patriots' 1 yard line with one timeout remaining. Russell Wilson was in shotgun formation, having short yardage expert Marshawn Lynch perched on his left hip. New England had it 8 in a box, expecting a run, but Wilson took the snap and promptly tried firing a short slant pass over the middle, which Malcolm Butler of the Patriots' corner undercut and intercepted it per the ESPN.com website. There was no joy in the Northwest that evening as the Patriots denied the Seahawks another Lombardi as they held on to win by the score of 28-24 over the Seattle Seahawks. The game's most valuable player was quarterback Tom Brady. We have a couple birthdays to talk about of the Hall of Famers. February 1st, 1908, New Haven, Connecticut. Albie Booth, the great Yale University halfback, arrived into this life. The National Football Foundation voters selected Albie Booth for entrance into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1966. Another birthday took place in 1915 on February 1st. Rupel, Louisiana, the legendary LSU end, Galen Tinsley was born. The National Football Foundation granted Gaynell Tinsley's collegiate gridiron legacy into the entrance into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1956. Now we get to that time in our show where I want to bring on our special guest. We're going to be talking to Craig Woodard Sr., the executive director of the Down Syndrome Association of Tampa Bay. He was a starting fullback for the Erie Invaders in the Indoor Football League in the year 2000, shooting 9 touchdowns in the inaugural season. He was the all-time leading rusher or carries leader at Mercyhurst University in Erie, Pennsylvania. He still holds the longest rush from scrimmage of 94 yards in 1992 with that team, and he was voted into the Pennsylvania Athletic Hall of Fame Erie Metro Chapter in 2006. He was elected to the Mercyhurst University Athletic Hall of Fame in 2016. He also won a PIAA Class AA Basketball State Championship in 1991 with Mercyhurst Prep, beating Bob Sura in a Wilkes-Barre GAR 58-55, where he scored 11 points in that game. And he was named the most valuable field performer in track and field his senior year in high school. He's also an author. Don't know where he gets all his time to do that, but he has 2 books out. One is called Sharing Life, Sharing Moments, and the other one came out in December 2019. It was the second book. It's called Down Syndrome, Blessed with This Ability, all one word. Ladies and gentlemen, Craig Woodard Sr., welcome to the Pigpen.
Thank you so much, Darren, for having me today. This is just an honor to be on with you today, and hopefully we got a lot of people that's going to be listening to this show.
Oh, it's our pleasure, and we usually do. We have quite an audience all around the world, so we'll get some great coverage because you have a great cause you're going to talk about in a little bit. But first, we want to get a little bit of detail about you as an athlete, as a young man. Well, you're still a young man, as a younger man. And, Craig, as we just read off, you have quite a list of accolades in sports history for Northwestern Pennsylvania's region. You're well-known around here, especially your basketball prowess and success was off the charts in high school. But since this is a football podcast, you had some excellent, excellent things that happened in your football career, especially in college. Could you tell us a little bit about your college accomplishments at Mercyhurst University?
Sure. Yeah. You know, the funny thing was, is I loved basketball. I just absolutely loved basketball. But when I started to play football, I fell in love with the sport, and football has been my number one love, you know, all my life as far as sports is concerned. Once I started playing, you know, my senior year, I had the opportunity to, go to Mercyhurst University my following year as a freshman. I actually turned down a partial scholarship to go to Kutztown University. My father was the vice president of student affairs down there. And, and John Mobley, who was the 16th pick in 1996, he was a linebacker down there. He ended up being drafted by the Denver Broncos. I would have been playing with him. But, you know, I didn't want to – I wanted to make a name for myself. I didn't want people to say, oh, he's on the team because he's Dr. Woodard's son. Or I didn't want any preferential treatment. I wanted to earn what I got. And so I my mom lived in Erie still. And so I was, you know, a mile or two away from her house, which was right by the stadium. And I was able to kind of get away from home, but still be there if something were to happen to my mother. So I made that choice to stay in town. And so went to Mercyhurst. I played for Jim Chapman my freshman year. We were Division II. And then for the last three years that I played, we switched to Division II. We were Division III my freshman year and then switched to Division II. Coming in, I was the third string tailback in camp. And I had two seniors that were in front of me. Pat Ott, I don't know if many people remember Pat. He used to play at Cathedral Prep. He was a great running back. And there was Chris Soltis as well. He was from, I believe he was from Ohio. But Pat was, he had some injuries, and he was battling a shoulder injury. And the first game of the year, Pat, he injured his shoulder, and he was done for the rest of the year. Chris Soltis ended up coming in, and he played the rest of the game. That was the first game of the year, and I didn't play in that game. The second game of the year was against Merrillville out of Tennessee, and it was at the stadium. And Chris will kill me for saying this, but he fumbled a couple times in the first half. And so Coach Chapman came to me during halftime, and he said, Woody, are you ready to play? And I said, ready to play? Coach, I was born ready. Yeah, I'm ready to play. You know, and so he said, well, you're starting the second half.
But you, you know, wow, you got a gamer when somebody answers your back like that.
That's right. I was, you know, in camp on scout team playing against, All-American defensive ends and linebackers and Robert Bandis and John Langer, Jack's son. There's some really good players that we had on the team. So I was running for my life in practice, so I was ready to go. And so second half comes out, and I'm here, true freshman, and I rushed for, in the second half, 130 yards and scored the game win. So after that game, you know, we ended up playing the following week. We played Gannon. And, you know, I don't know how things are right now. It's nice that Mercyhurst has a field on campus. I didn't get a chance to experience that since our home field was the stadium, you know. But we played Gannon for our homecoming game. And, of course, I'm getting used to the whole – the crosstown rivalry and how important this was. And I really found out how important that was on Friday night when Coach took all the starters, offense and defense, and we went to a hotel downtown to spend the night at the hotel to get off of the campus so that we would not be influenced by any of the parties and all the good stuff that was going on for homecoming weekend.
That's
and
a smart coach. Like,
oh man, I was just like, wow, this is how serious this is. It was just amazing for me as a freshman. Here I am, 18, and I had just turned 18 a couple months prior to my birthday is June 26th. So, I'm coming into this game, you know, like, okay, let's play, you know. So, we lost to Gannon by 3 points, I believe it was, that year. I had two touchdowns and 124 yards rushing. That was the first year I did the Heisman pose, if you remember that, and it was all on the thing. And so that my nickname throughout the rest of the year became Heisman, because a lot of the other schools saw that tape, and you know, they were all out to get me at that point, you know. But I ended up rushing in 9 games. I rushed for 1,166 yards.
That's amazing. You're a freshman.
It's funny too, Darren, because there's some stats I didn't even know about. I was the first freshman at Mercer's College to ever break 1,000 yards. I was the first running back ever to rush for 1,000 yards. So I had the freshman record. I also had the overall record. I rushed for 222 yards against Canisius in one game. I averaged 6.6 yards a carry and averaged 130 yards per game. And after that season was over, and this is the one thing I did not know. Now, I was named the ECAC Southern Division Rookie of the Year, but in Division III football, I was the number one leading freshman rusher in the entire country, and out of all of college football, including Division I and everything, there was only one other freshman in all of college football that rushed for more yards than I did. I was number 2 in the country overall as a freshman. Now, that was the year Marshall Faulk, it was his senior year. I believe Garrison Hurst was a junior that year. Marshall Faulk led the country. But as a freshman, there was only one other freshman named David Wright that outrushed me as a freshman in the entire country. And no one had ever told me that. I just found that out just a couple of years ago, and I have a plaque on my wall. I think that's an accomplishment that many people throughout their athletic career would love to be, you know, a part of something like that, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, there can't be many people in the world that can say that. You know, that's an amazing feat.
Yeah. You know, so I had high hopes coming in to my sophomore year. And, you know, as I said before, where there's ups, there's downs. And I did a lot of training. You know, the stadium, I used to go in the stadium around noon every day, and I would run all the steps. I would do my workout on the field. I would go across the street where the hill is at, you know, the little hill that we used to sled ride down in the wintertime.
Right.
Well, I used to run that hill until I'd get sick, you know, and I was that focused and prepared for my following year. I wanted to rush. I wanted to break 2,000 yards. That was one of my goals. And I told my coach when I came in, David Armstrong, who was the offensive line coach, I told him, I said, this is what my goal is coming in. And so sophomore year came in and we did some really good things. I had 168 yards and a touchdown or two against Gannon starting off. Things were going pretty well. We had the tougher part of our season early on, but we were in the sixth game of the season, we were the first game ever to play Duquesne on their home field. And they had a turf field, and actually to play on their turf field. Let me just correct that. The turf was, it was horrible. It was like one of those old welcome mats, you know, and it just was really bad. And it was first or second play in the second quarter. I caught a pass out in the flat, and I'm heading up to up the sideline, and I saw two things. I saw a defender, and I saw Todd Melfi, my wide receiver, stock blocking for me. And to the left of me, I saw nothing but green. And I thought, oh, wow, all I got to do is plant to the right and cut back to the left, and this is a touchdown. And as soon as I planted to the right, I did not see to my far left. There was a linebacker coming full speed, and as soon as I planted, he hit me on the left side, and my foot stuck in the turf, and I tore my MCL, my ACL. I had a bone chip. I tore meniscus and I blew my knee out.
My God.
And it was devastating. So,
I can't imagine.
Yeah, when there's ups, there's downs, and I had to overcome that adversity through my career. So come senior year, I ended up breaking the career rushing record. After the season was done, I played in the I got invited to the National All-Star game that was in Cleveland, and
wow.
We did a combine was out there, and I was noticed by one of the Pittsburgh scouts, and they called my coach. I still remember Coach Armstrong calling me up. It was like a Sunday morning early, and I wrote it down on this little envelope because I was still half asleep. And he said that that they wanted me to invite me to a free agent tryout the following morning down at Three River Stadium, and I had to be there at a certain time. And I wrote all that down, and luckily I was able to go down, and I didn't make the squad, but being there was just incredible from what I've been through my career.
Oh, that is phenomenal. Who was the coach at Pittsburgh at that time? Was it Ben Cower?
It was Cower. And if you can imagine, there's only 45 of us invited down there, and I was actually down there. Yeah, and I was down there with two of my teammates, Chris Vlasic. He was our starting center, and then one of our wide receivers, Todd Melfi, was invited as well. And to be in the locker room with all the other guys and to come out through the tunnel to get on the field, and we're running the 40-yard dash and all these other breakout sessions, you know, just to kind of explain how the 40-yard dash was. Cower was at the end of the 40 yards, and there were cones on two sides.
So you actually had Bill Cower there for your tryout. It wasn't the assistant coaches and scouts. It was actually Bill Cower was there too.
Cower was there along with the other assistant scouts, stuff like this. And this is how big and nervous the nerve-wracking this was. Cower was standing at the end of the 40-yard line. And so when you look up, you see him. Now you got cones on the left-hand side at every 5-yard line, cones on the right side at every 5-yard line. And on every cone, there was a coach with a stopwatch. So it's like you're running down a tunnel doing your 40-yard dash. And they were timing your splits to see how fast you got to 5 to 10 to 15. And Coach Carroll was at the end. And I ended up running a 4.45, which was the normal. And this is after blowing my knee out, too.
Yeah,
so,
that's really impressive.
Yeah, and lo and behold, Darren, this was the year that they signed Jerome Bettis. You know, a little small guy from Notre Dame. Yeah. So my hopes and my dreams. But just being there, man, and remembering that experience and being able to tell, you know, my kids and my friends that I was one chosen to come down to participate in something like that. There's a lot of people that don't even make it that far.
Oh, gosh, with the hair standing up in the back of my neck, you're just telling me on the phone, you know, a couple decades later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, just for the listeners that never got a chance to watch you play, what style of a runner would you describe yourself as to the listeners?
You know, to be honest with you, I I'm just going to be totally honest because my coach would want me to be. I loved my idol was Walter Payton. I loved
good idol to have.
Yeah, and that is the main reason why I wore number 34 when I played. I was a hard-nosed running back. I was 5'10", started about 185, and then my senior year I bulked up to about 205. So I was about 5'10", 205, but I was the type of running back that if I had to go through you, that's exactly what I was going to do. I would love to use my speed and outrun you and go around you, but I could also cut naturally. I had some pretty good moves. So it was whatever was required of me when I was running the ball is what I did. That's I guess the best way that I can explain it. If I'm running an ISO play up the middle and we need 3 hard yards, I'm going to get you those 3 hard yards. If we're running a sweep, like the when I broke the record, it was a 94-yard sweep. I'm at the dot in the I in the formation. I'm standing in the end zone, and I take the pitch, and I'm going to the right, and I'm running. I'm being a little patient, and then I get a block, and then I hit the sideline, and then I head up the sideline, and I cut back to the left, and my speed actually got me all the way, 94 yards. And, you know, here I'm a freshman breaking records, and I didn't even know it was a record, you know. So there was, you know, like I said, whatever was required of me at the time is what you got from me, and that's the type of runner I was.
Now, you are probably the prototypical back that the NFL now is using. I mean, you run for power, you run for speed, catching balls out of the backfield, you know, as you described earlier. You know, you're probably a little bit before your time, you know, to be really appreciated in some of the game, you know, that's going on today.
Yeah, there was Thurman Thomas was a great double threat. Where he was a great receiver out of the backfield, but yet he could run the ball very well. Ricky Waters, same thing, same style, you know, and I'm thinking of even back in the day when I was playing, these are the guys that did it, back then. When, you know, you come a little bit more current, who's retired now though, but LaDainian Tomlinson took that up and, you know, you see, what is the running back from, the New Orleans Saints right now?
Kamara.
Yes. Same style. Very, very quick, hard runner, but can be effective as a receiver. I remember, my junior year, I was probably after my knee surgery. I came back and played. I should have redshirted, but I didn't. Because I'm a competitor, and if I can run, I'm going to play. And I should have sat out, but I did not play, sit out. I came back my junior year. So less than a year later, back in 94, if you think about how the knee surgeries were then, here I am back on the football field, you know, and I was wearing a brace. But I was probably about 85%. I wasn't all the way healed, but it was a mind thing for me to get back. It was a very depressing time, and I wanted to feel what I felt my freshman year again, you know. And, you know, I was used in a different way against Gannon my junior year where I was, you know, I had two straight years over 100 yards rushing against them. That's what I was used to. But I was splitting time at the running back position with Shea Berkeley, and I was used a lot as a threat as a receiver out of the backfield. And I did have more than 100 yards receiving against Gannon my junior year. So, so as a running back, I still was able to be effective out of the backfield as a receiver as well. So, those are some of the guys that I probably compared myself to as far as my running style and ability coming out of the backfield.
Okay. Now, while you were at Mercyhurst, I believe Mercyhurst and Gannon are both colleges for our listeners that are in the Erie, Pennsylvania area. And you started out, they were Division III, and at some point during your career, they moved up to Division II. Could you describe, as a player, what's that like to go have a Division III program move up to Division II? And what are some of the differences of the game when you played?
You know, my freshman year, I joined Mercyhurst. I was already in classes at 17 because I took classes in the summer. So I was a young guy, man. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
I was
absolutely.
A young guy at 17, and I just turned 18 in the summertime, and then football starts, you know, a month or two later, and we were Division III, and then I was exposed to a lot of talent through my freshman year. And I had to do a lot of growing up. Now, just kind of going back before that, Darren, I played 1 year of football in eighth grade because I went to St. Patrick's, and St. Patrick's joined with St. Andrews because we didn't have enough kids. So we played football for St. Andrews, and I played on that team with you remember Tony Roby, and Coach Roby mm-hmm. was our coach, and those guys. So that's how I got exposed to football. Now, I chose to go to Mercier's Prep, ninth grade and through high school, but they didn't have a football team yet. So they kept saying, oh, we're going to get a football team, we're going to get a football team. But remember, I love basketball. So I went to Mercier's Prep to play basketball with my buddy, Kyle Horton, who he went to Wayne when I was at St. Patrick's. And when he was at Wayne, he used to come over to the park when we had soccer practice, and we would talk in eighth grade about winning a state championship in basketball if we went to the same high school. And so he went to Mercier's Prep, and I went to Mercier's Prep. Shelby Wiley went to Mercier's Prep, and we just had a blast up there. You know what I mean? So
you guys were a powerhouse, that's for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. So football wasn't that high on my priority list at that point because I loved basketball. But then I heard that Ron Costello was gonna, the late great Ron Costello was coming to start a football program, and he started that my junior year. We were varsity reserve, so we played basically a JV schedule, but both teams could play their juniors, and I was a junior there. We went 8-2. I remember we beat the Prep team that year at our home field, which was at Mercier's College, and then we ended up going 3-6 the following year, which was our first year varsity. So I was still very new and raw in learning the game. So, you know, my freshman year when I played against Division III, and then sophomore year I started to play against the Division II teams, I really didn't know the difference, you know, because I would just go out and do my thing, and I could tell the talent-wise was better my sophomore year, but it's not that much of a difference. It really, really, Division III and Division II is not that much of a difference. The big leap would be Division II to Division I. Now, when I played in that All-Star game after my senior year, on our All-Star team was Division I and Division II players. So I was able, I'm actually looking at my helmet hanging on the wall right now. I have in All-Star games, we're able to exchange your emblems on your helmet, you know?
Right,
and
right.
So I took a bunch of M's, and a lot of people had the M's on theirs, and I'm looking at DeWaylon Henderson. He was a running back for Bowling Green. I have the Hawks or something like that. I can't remember, but I have that right at the front of my helmet. And so playing with some of the Division I players in that particular capacity, I could see a huge difference compared to Division II and Division III.
Gotcha. Now, take it a little bit different direction, okay? Pigskin mm-hmm. Dispatch, we're based on positive aspects of the game of football and good people associated with it. In your playing experience, who was your biggest influence or supporter in your years of football, any level or all your levels, and who had the most positive effect in helping to make you the man you are today with the game of football in mind?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. On the football side of things, probably the two most influential people that really touched my life, helped me through everything, taught me how to grow up, and I would still to this day run through a brick wall for them, was two people. Number one, like I said, head coach Ron Costello, who started it all for me, really.
Great man.
Absolutely. And second would be my head coach in college for my last 3 years, Joe Kimball. Joe came in, and he was a father figure to me. And he was tough on me. He wouldn't let me get away with anything. He kept me grounded. He knew as a young athlete and, All-American that the accolades could easily go to my head. And you know, I kind of avoided this earlier when I was telling you I was going to be 100% honest when we were talking about the type of running back that I was. I was a showboat, you know, and I would not teach my kids to do this now. Actually, I have a 21-year-old. Dante will be 21 next month, and then I have a 19-year-old that's on a football scholarship at North Carolina Central University up in Durham. He's a wide receiver up there, Jordan. And I try to teach them to be humble and to act like they've been there before, because I went through it myself. And so, you know, we talked about doing the Heisman pose and, you know, being flashy and things of that nature. I was one of those type of people where, you know, my mother, unfortunately, my mom was very involved in church. Not unfortunately, that's a great thing for her. However, that kept her from coming to my games. I didn't have that support in high school. My father lived out of town, so I didn't have my parents to come and watch me play on senior night when you're supposed to hand a rose to your parents, and I didn't have my family there. You know what I mean? So, when I was a youngster and I started to get involved in sports, whenever I won an award, that award meant something to me. You know, personally, it meant I did well and I worked hard for this and look at what I did. And so I used to keep my awards, you know, and stack them up and put little trophy cases together and keep track of them. And because that was to me as a young guy, that validated me as an athlete.
Well,
you know,
with everything you were accomplishing, your mother probably had to put an addition on the house. That's going on.
Yeah, and I got a weird story about that. I ended up, when I got older, actually just some years ago, I had all of my stuff, all of my memorabilia, my state championship medal, my ECAC Rookie of the Year award, my Hall of Fame plaque from 2006, like all this stuff I had in storage because I had moved from North Carolina to Tampa, Florida. And it was up there for a couple of years. I paid a bill every month. Then I'm like, I don't want to make the trip up there. It was 10 hours up and 10 hours back. Finally, I said, okay, I'm going to go up, get my stuff. And I get up there. My stuff was stolen out of the storage. Now, why someone would want that stuff when it's personal to me, I have no idea, but all of those things that I just told you about that I felt validated me back then was stolen from me, you know. Oh, and
that's just going on all levels there.
Yeah, it hurt really, really bad. And then I thought, you know what? It's all good. My family at this point validates me. And so that was most important. You know, they can take the material things away, but they can't take away what I've done,
absolutely.
You know? And so that's how it was for me growing up. And so Ron Costello and Joe Kimball filled a void for me that I had in my life. And I appreciate both of them. And I know Coach Cause passed away my freshman year in college. And I remember when I went to his viewing, I stood in line for about 2 hours waiting to get in. That's how many people came to pay their respects to him. And he was just wonderful. And Carol Costello, his wife, was like the football mom for us at Mercier's Prep. And Coach Kimball and his wife Heather and their kids, who the three boys, they played at Mercier's College as well. And to watch them grow up, you know, Coach used to tell me that they would get on the field after we were done, the college team, his little boys would get on the field, and they would actually fight each other by who was going to play Craig Woodard.
That's one of the highest honors you get right there. There's your biggest award.
It doesn't get any better than that. You know what I mean? So Coach Kimball is definitely high as one of the two people that had a strong effect on my life, and I love them both dearly.
Well, that's awesome. Okay, now I'm going to have you do a little bit of role-playing right now. I want you to pretend you're talking to a young player or their parents or both, and if you could tell them one positive thing about participating in the game of football, what would it be to encourage them to play?
If I were talking to a young man or a parent, I would say, young man, you chose the best sport ever to play because you're going to develop a brotherhood that's going to last a lifetime. And there's a lot of people that have played different sports but haven't played football that don't understand the type of brotherhood that you develop by playing football. Football is a totally different sport. When you get older, you can go out and you can play slow pitch baseball. You can play volleyball. You can play in rec leagues for basketball. You can play flag football if you want. It's not the same. When you're done playing tackle football with equipment on through either high school or the college level, or if you're lucky enough to make it to the pros, when you're done, you're done. It's nothing that you can go out and suit up again and play. And so when you are having the opportunity to share blood, sweat, and tears with your brother that's lined up next to you, you have developed a brotherhood for life that you'll never forget. And it's a sport that teaches you about life. It teaches you about trust. It teaches you about integrity. It teaches you about brotherhood, manhood, uplift, perseverance. It teaches you all these things in one sport. And I firmly believe that this is the only sport that can teach you all of that. I mean, you can learn lots of lessons from all types of different sports, but football is unique in this regard. That's what I would say.
I don't know about the rest of the listeners, but I'm ready to suit up with you right now and go out on the field. That was awesome. That was a great, great thing. My kid's playing. Greg's playing. Now let's shift to our attention now. I mean, that's a great career, great football career, and all athletic endeavors that you did. But let's shift attention to what you're doing now, because you've got something really special and awesome coming up during the Super Bowl week down in Tampa where it's being played that you'd like to tell us all about.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I'm a small piece of the pie here, but I was asked to be a part of what's called the Superfest. And the Superfest is it's run every year, and it's hosted by the Matthew Foundation. And Jessamy Tang runs the Matthew Foundation, and her son, of course, Matthew, was, I like to say, blessed with Down syndrome when he was born. My son, Craig Jr., who's 6 years old, was blessed with Down syndrome when he was born as well. So I started a nonprofit organization with my wife and some other like-minded individuals down here almost 3 years ago called the Down Syndrome Association of Tampa Bay, where I'm the executive director and the president. And it's a nonprofit 501c3 organization. We do a lot of fundraising down here. We do a lot of advocacy work. And we push for inclusion. That's the main thing that we do. So with the Super Bowl being right in my backyard, the Matthew Foundation reached out to me. I had a meeting with them, and they wanted to see if I would be involved to help them out connection-wise, put together their Superfest. Now, what it was supposed to be was a football camp for an hour and a cheerleading clinic as well. But with the pandemic and COVID-19 hit, we had to pivot a little bit and change some things around because we couldn't rent a facility, a field. We couldn't do any of that because no places were available based off of the pandemic. So what we decided to do was to pivot and do a virtual event, which is going to run. I'll probably have it on my page. You can follow our, I know you're going to get to this, but you can follow my Facebook page for the organization. If you just click in at 21 Strong Forever, I'll have that link. That's going to run February 6th. It's the Saturday before Super Bowl Sunday at 9 a.m. And so what we wanted to do is still hear from NFL players, you know, community leaders, things in that nature about inclusion in sports and the value of proper training. And, you know, we wanted to put together this event that way so that people could still kind of get that experience and listen to while looking at interviews and videos by some of their favorite players that they may remember. And so I started to reach out to a lot of the players that I grew up with, played against, family members, things of that nature. So I just started to go through my the people that I know from the Erie area, and lo and behold, I got a hold of a bunch of guys that at the drop of the dime would help me out for the cause that I'm doing and would take time out of their day to help my organization, help another organization.
So
grateful. So just to kind of name a few of the guys that I was able to reach out and do Zoom interviews with was a childhood friend of mine, Mark Tate, who played at Cathedral Prep. He also played for the New England Patriots, the Philadelphia Eagles. He played in the CFL for a little bit. He played for the XFL and also played in NFL Europe, and he was on the 1994 undefeated Penn State team. One of his buddies and teammates from that 1994 undefeated Penn State team was Erie's own, Erie County's own Fort LaBeouf's Brian Milne. Everybody remembers Brian Milne, who senior year fought off Hodgkin's disease and earned a scholarship to Penn State and then ended up going to the Cincinnati Bengals. He played for them. He played for the Saints. He played for the Seahawks. He's also a state champion shot put and discus thrower, I think javelin as well. I mean, he did everything. He was truly a man among boys, Brian Belt. So Brian, he took the time out of his busy schedule. His son, Connor, plays college football as well, and he's doing really, really well. It's just great to catch up with him. I haven't talked to him in quite some time. Some of the other notables, my cousin, Cliff Crosby. Cliff won a Super Bowl ring with the St. Louis Rams back in the day. He also played for the Indianapolis Colts. He also played for East High, and he went on a scholarship at University of Maryland and played there. He also played with a former teammate of mine from Mercier's Prep, who was a year behind me, Eric Hicks. Eric Hicks went on and played at University of Maryland with Cliff Crosby, and Eric signed as a free agent, I believe, in 1998 with the Kansas City Chiefs. And at one point, I want to say it was 2002, Eric was leading the league in sacks with 14 before he suffered a knee injury. That was it was going to be his best year right there. And I talked to him about that in our interview. But Eric's doing wonderful. His son actually just accepted a football scholarship at Bowling Green University for next year, too. It's just so funny how these connections come. Matthew Hatchett, who played at Jefferson, Ohio, ended up playing at Mercyhurst with me our freshman year together. And then he ended up transferring to Langston University. He played at Langston University for 3 years. And he ended up getting picked up by the Minnesota Vikings, and he played with Chris Carter and Randy Moss, and he was on that 98 NFC team with Randall Cunningham slinging it, and those guys put up a lot of points. So these guys, you know, I was able to reach out to and speak to. One last one was Javon Johnson, who went to my high school, but he was a few years behind me. You remember Javon very well, right?
Yes, I do.
Yep. And, you know, Javon, he was with the Pittsburgh Steelers for a year and a half. He ended up then going to the CFL and played, I believe, 11 years in the CFL. He was the first defensive back to win the CFL Defensive Player of the Year award. He won a Grey Cup. And he just did great things up there before retiring just a couple years ago, and he's now coaching. So, you know, to see him play and mentor him when he was in high school, and I was on the news at that time, but him and the Rowan brothers, LaVon and Daiwan Rowan, those guys, they used to just ask me questions all the time, and I would come to their games and practices, and they're like little brothers to me, you know, so – to catch up with all of these guys and to see how successful they were and to see that they would give back and give me time to help out for a very unique charitable event, I think was just a blessing. And all of them said, whatever you need, you let me know and I'm there. And I thought that was awesome. The coolest thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah, the amazing thing of being here, I mean, we're, you know, our podcast is going all around the world, but amazing thing, all of those names are played within probably 20 miles of Erie. Most of them played right here in the city of Erie. A lot of them for Mercyhurst. And just to give our listeners an idea, Mercyhurst Prep is probably, well, at the time we had probably six high schools in the city of Erie at that time. And Mercyhurst was probably one of the smaller ones in the city, playing at a lower level. And to have that many gentlemen that came out of that program to do great things, that's quite a testament to what Coach Costello started and all his predecessors after there and all the administrators of Mercyhurst Prep. That's incredible. That's great.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you think about it, from the old school ranking, I know things are different now, but they used to go single A, double A, triple A, and then quad A. Mm-hmm. And Mercyhurst Prep, we were always double A. And because we didn't have, and it went by the amount of boys that you had in the school or girls when you went single A, double A, you know, same thing.
Right.
So with us not having that many boys in the school, we were double A when it came down to football and to for basketball. And, you know, in 1991, which was my junior year, when it came down to basketball season, that year we won the state championship, and our girls were triple A. And they won the state championship as well. And that was the first time in Erie County history where two teams from the same school, boys and girls, won the state championship the same year. And that was pretty big back then with Kyle Horton and myself and Brian Berger and Ron Swanson. And then on the girls' side, you had Teresa Zumagala, the Baginski twins, Danielle and Denise. You had Gina Figbello. You had Angie Potoff, who played at Penn State. It was just incredible that year.
It sure was. Well, hey, could you, if we want to make sure, before we close up here, want to make sure we give the listeners where they can find Superfest and the date and time again, so we'll make sure everybody tunes into what you got going on down there.
Yeah, there's going to be a couple different avenues that we're still trying to work out some of the fine print on where you'll be able to find it, but you can easily find it on the Down Syndrome Association of Tampa Bay's organization page, and you can follow us at 21 Strong Forever. And also like our page, and on that morning, February 6th at 9:00, I will have a link on our page where you can click on and you can watch our virtual event. I will also have the event running on my own personal page as well. You can look me up if you'd like, Craig Woodard Sr. Yeah, you can follow it there as well. Those are the two places that I know it's definitely going to be at. Obviously, it's probably going to be somewhere at the Matthew Foundation website, but we're going to try to really push this out through social media first. But I told Jessamay from the Matthew Foundation when we were talking about this specific platform, and I said, well, look, we have to create a link, and then once you get the link, let me know what the link is, and I'll run it on my page. So it'll probably be the easiest just to look on Facebook and follow at 21 Strong Forever. That's the Down Syndrome Association of Tampa Bay page. We'll have it right there.
Okay. That's great. Now, would you, we also mentioned earlier you had your books out. If you want to let people know where they can get a copy of the book that's out.
Sure. Yeah. I wrote two books. My first book, funny story about that, Darren. I spoke at, actually I was a guest speaker at the Mercier's Prep football banquet years ago when I was still in college. And I was talking about, you know, my life and what I had been through at that time. And my English teacher, Miss Perfetto, she came up to me afterwards and she said, you had such an interesting life, and I didn't know that about you when you were in school. She said, you should write a book someday. And I'm like, ah, I ain't going to write no book someday. She's my English teacher, you know. And I woke up one morning, back in 2000, I think it was 13 or 14, and I was like, you know what? I think I want to write a book. Because I had been through a lot of different things even as an adult. And so I wrote an autobiography. It's called Sharing Life, Sharing Moments. It was out for a couple years, did really well in sales, and then the publishing company ended up going out of business. So I might have it reprinted with another publishing company and maybe do a revised version of it, but that book is no longer available. However, I wrote a second book, and I didn't think I was going to have this in me either, but as I stated, my son,
Craig Jr. will be very proud of you.
Yes, he would. Yes, absolutely. Craig Jr., when he was born 6 years ago, he just really touched our lives, my wife and I, and he's a wonderful kid. He was blessed with Down syndrome, and he has beaten all the obstacles that everyone, including the doctor, said he would not be able to beat. And he's doing wonderful right now, and it's just a blessing for us. So I got together with my organization, and I thought, hey, we need to write a book where each family takes a chapter and you write about your experience. And so I got six other families together that wrote a chapter in this book, and I started it off, and I wrote everything else that had to do with it, and they added their chapter, and it's called Down Syndrome Blessed with This Ability. And it's available at Amazon.com. It's available at BarnesandNoble.com as well. I believe you can get it at all the bookstores, but mostly online. They'll have it. It's available in the Kindle version as well. And all you have to do is Google Down Syndrome Blessed with This Ability, T-H-I-S ability, this ability. I try to turn that into a positive thing, because anytime you hear the word disability, you think about something negative. And so when I do my, speaking engagements around town, I talk about this all the time, this ability. Let's make this a positive thing.
That is very clever indeed. Well, Craig Woodard Sr., I thank you for joining us and sharing us into this discussion of personal football history. And thank you for giving us some awareness of your very worthy cause that you're preparing for right now and always preparing for. But the Superfest is something really big that we're excited for, especially in the football community. I was a big fan of watching you play the game in your younger years, and now I'm even a bigger fan of the great organization's events you're representing today. So, Craig, thank you very much for joining us on the Pigskin Dispatch. Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Darren. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure thing. And again, folks, you can join him at 21 Strong Forever to make sure on February 6th, 9 a.m., you catch that great program that Craig Woodard Sr. will be running with the Matthew Foundation at the Super Bowl down in Tampa. So thank you once again, Craig.
Thank you, sir.
Wow, now that was an awesome interview that Craig Woodard Sr. Had with us, and sharing his personal athletic abilities, especially on the gridiron, gave us some great insight of what his career was all about. And he also is telling us about the Superfest, which I'm sure everybody is going to want to make sure you join on February 6th at 9 a.m. on his hashtag 21 Strong website, Facebook, that you can join him on and hear some of these great interviews with these NFL veterans that are sharing their time to help a worthy cause. Make sure you join him there. And also, don't forget, play our search for the yardage keyword game on our search box on pigskindispatch.com. Look for the rules up at the top on pigskindispatch.com under win a free prize, and you'll see the rules for search for the yardage, and make sure you do those searches because you can win a great prize at the end of the week. So make sure you check out our sportshistorynetwork.com for all our partners there that have some great podcasts, and hit the subscribe button for this podcast, or join us every day on pigskindispatch.com for the latest blog post and podcast. And we'll talk to you tomorrow, folks. Thanks for joining us. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, sports fans. This is Mark Mortier from Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. I just wanted to thank everyone who has listened to my podcasts and read my articles during the year of 2023. I wish you all a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, or whatever holiday you may be celebrating, and for a joyful new year. Thank you once again.
This is Hart Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, a part of the Sports History Network. We here at Sports History Network want to wish everyone a wonderful holiday season and extend our gratitude for your support of the Sports History Network. Happy holidays to all.
Hi, my friends of sports history. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcast. I want to thank you for supporting the Sports History Network and all of us podcasters here, along with our podcasts and our other works, such as our websites and books, especially my podcast, the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Jersey Dispatch podcast, and the Orville Mulligan Sports Writer podcast that I helped co-create and produce with Oz Davis. Also, thanks a lot for supporting my book, The World's Greatest Pro Gridiron Team, the 1903 Franklin All-Stars. And remember the reason for the season coming up here at the holidays, and spend time with your family and friends and enjoy each other. Have a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.